There's a big news event happening and acts as event planner and scheduler and script proofreader. Often it just means you're the problem solver on the ground. So anything that the reporters need to do their job, you're kind of there to help with. You know, the beauty of it is that you get to support people who are telling people stories that you can't get if you're not on the ground. Making sure that they have power strips and showers, things like that. It feels like you're part of this bigger team effort to help tell the story. I think it's so important to have eyes and ears on something as small as a school board vote to as large as a global conflict. There's a lot that goes into reporting a story that doesn't always get seen, but is crucial to doing the story, and we could not do that without listener donations.
Keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
So you've never donated to this station before. That's okay. Today is a great day to make your first gift. Here's how.
Give now to Radio Catskill at WJFFradio.org.
It's WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org, or you can also call us here at 845-482-4141. It's now the 6 o'clock hour. This is when we get into the local edition. We're about to start the local edition, but before we do, we need to hear from you. I need you to know that you're the one that we're waiting to hear from. We hear from so many people that they appreciate the local news that we have here. Two local daily news and talk programs, two shows every single day during the week at a small radio station like ours. It's a phenomenal feat. And I'm proud of the work that we're able to do to bring this to you. And I'm thankful for all of the folks that helped make this happen. But we wouldn't be able to do this without you. We wouldn't be able to do this without the financial support of listeners who decide to go from being listeners, which is a phenomenal thing on public radio, to be a listener of public radio. But some folks take that extra step to give what they can. And if they didn't, we wouldn't be able to bring you the local news like we're about to bring you right here on the local edition. So please make a donation to help us end the summer fun drive. This is day 10 of the fun drive. We need to end it, and we can't do it alone. We need you to help. Give what you can. Do give now. 845-482-4141. Go to WJFFradio.org. WJFFradio.org. 845-482-4141. Donate in honor of local news right now. Donate in honor of the staff that works hard to bring you this news. Donate in honor of our paid interns that help us bring you this news. Donate in honor of the volunteers that work hard to bring you this news, as well as our many news partners in the community. Support this hub for local information, this bulwark against a news desert in our rural area. We're keeping everybody connected. We're keeping the news on the air. We need you to be part of this. Be a partner. Help us out. Be a member of the station. Give now. 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. Okay, well, here we are. It is the local edition. Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here. Coming up, we learn about Medicare Advantage. We talk to New York Focus for that. But first, we have a lot of local news to get to from the River Reporter. For that, we turn to the River Reporter's own Ruby Rayner, joining us live on the phone. Ruby, welcome back to the local edition.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So, let's start someplace fun. I see that it's Derry Court time. I know that's a big deal in Wayne County. The Wayne County commissioners, they were drinking some milk, talking some dairy. What can you tell us about milk in Wayne County, PA?
Yeah, I learned a lot, too, reading this. The Wayne County commissioners meeting, the commissioners approved a proclamation that designated June as Dairy Month officially, and designated July as Ice Cream Month in Wayne County. The Wayne County Dairy Court, so the dairy princesses, young women and girls who represent local farmers and spread the word about the importance of the dairy industry, particularly in Wayne County and throughout Pennsylvania, were there to celebrate the signing of this proclamation, which actually speaks to a much longer history of dairy in Pennsylvania, which I didn't know. I am from the New York side, but it's actually Pennsylvania's official state beverage. And Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer said, and I'll quote her here, quote, "This is a big part of our history, and it is a big part of our future here in Wayne County."
So, yeah, I mean, you're learning a lot about the history, but what does that mean that it's part of the future? And in what way? What might that look like?
Yeah, so based on some Pennsylvania dairy farm census data comparing from 2017 and 2022, we can kind of get a glimpse of an idea of what dairy in general looks like in Pennsylvania and what that may mean for the future of dairy in Wayne County and Pennsylvania. This data is statewide, but it trends this similarly as in Wayne County, and so it can kind of give us a bit of a sense of what to expect of the future of dairy, which, like Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer said, is, you know, something that they are obviously taking time to highlight and investing in. So the total number of farms in Pennsylvania, dairy farms, have decreased by 8% from 2017 to 2022, and the average age of all dairy producers increased slightly in the state of Pennsylvania from a little over 54 to a little over 55. So we can kind of glean from this that there is definitely still continues to be a challenge in attracting younger people to farming, which is crucial for planning for the future. And that's true of, in my experience in reporting on the New York side for dairy and non-dairy farming. But the interesting part is that the average net income per farm increased. So despite this decrease in perhaps the number of farms, they remain to seem to be profitable. And this kind of points to this consolidation trend. I spoke with Caitlin Lutz from the Cornell Cooperative Extension, who said that she works in dairy management for the extension, and spoke about how on both the New York and Pennsylvania side, there's been a trend of consolidation of dairy farms. She gave one particular example about a dairy farm that didn't have a succession plan, which could have been a contributing factor to that they ended up selling it to a larger farm. And also touches on that data that reflects the age, not necessarily going down, of producers. So while there are still concerns about farm consolidation and the aging of producers, the industry stays profitable, which is definitely, you know, important. And from the proclamation itself shows kind of how dairy in Wayne County specifically and Pennsylvania is an economic driver. So Pennsylvania has the second highest number of dairy farm families, a little under 5,000 in the country. And these families manage more than 465,000 cows, which can produce up to 10 billion pounds of milk per year, which I don't really, that's a lot of milk. And the proclamation also states that one dairy cow in the state of Pennsylvania creates $24,000 in economic revenue, and every 10 dairy cows supports at least one job in the dairy food supply industry. So this was written into this proclamation that was signed by the commissioners, honoring June as Dairy Month and July as Ice Cream Month.
Okay, and so in there you were talking about, you know, the aging out essentially of dairy farmers, and so key to the future of dairy farming is retaining, you know, young people in the region and also keeping them interested in ag and farming. And I guess that's where the Dairy Princesses come in. What you want to tell folks about the Dairy Princesses who are at the meeting to promote dairy? They must be the future.
Yeah, I think that is definitely part of the idea of having these young women and girls who represent local farms and spread the word about the importance of dairy industry. It's a nonprofit that promotes dairy. It has some of the major sponsors and donors are Allied Milk Producers Cooperative, American Dairy Association Northeast and Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania Dairymen's Association. And mainly what this group, they have it on a county level and then also on a state level, is what these princesses do is they go out to into their communities, partnering with local dairy farms, partnering with those different businesses and giving out and promoting them. So they're in schools, fairs, and, you know, one of the dairy princesses, Zoe Tyler, back in June, you know, went to Wayne Highlands Middle School and facilitated a couple of STEM activities that discussed, you know, the nutrients of milk and, you know, engaged other young people within kind of what local farming and dairy in Wayne County and Pennsylvania looks like.
Now, Ruby, I know we've got another story from Pennsylvania to get to, and we've only got about 10 minutes left to get to all the stories that we have, actually more like 8 minutes. But I do have to interject here quick an additional news update, which is it's Wednesday in the summer. Calicoon Center Band performs on Wednesdays, but not tonight. Calicoon Center Band is canceling their concert tonight due to the weather. There is a severe thunderstorm watch in effect until 8 o'clock tonight for our entire listening area. And there, as stronger cells blow through, we've been getting these warnings on the emergency alert system. And so just a fair warning, Ruby, the emergency alert system might pop up in the middle of all this as well. But real quick, can you give us an update on the story about vandalism, alleged vandalism, at the Honesdale Borough Pool?
Yes. So just to give a little bit of context, the paper first reported that the entire staff of the Honesdale Department of Public Works had quit their jobs this past April, which is relevant to this alleged vandalism because the borough pool was, when it was investigated for this potential vandalism, the borough police brought in those DPW workers that had all recently quit to the police station for a 3-hour polygraph test. But the update here is that the new information from the investigation by the borough police determined that the significant damage that was done to the pool was, in fact, not vandalism.
Oh, wow. So that was a bit of a surprise.
Yes. The DPW workers who were brought in and questioned based on this investigation determined that the damage that occurred was not because of vandalism or any of this, the DPW workers who had quit recently, but because of the pump house hadn't been properly winterized. And so several of the pipe fittings had frozen and subsequently failed when the water was then turned back on in the spring.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for letting us know that. Now, moving on to some New York State news. Let's start with the Tustin Town meeting where they're talking tree planting and parking solutions. What's the update here?
Yeah, I'll start off with parking concerns. Main Street is busy, so that's good news for a lot of people. But it is very difficult when Main Street in Narrowsburg is busy for cars to drive at the same time up and down the street. And one resident thinks that the reason why this summer, more so than other summers before, that it is even more crowded and causing even more traffic and congestion is because the Rasmussen building, previously a furniture store, has reopened as the Shops at Narrowsburg on Main Street. It houses multiple small businesses, including a French restaurant, a coffee shop, and a children's toy and clothing store. And that just opened a couple of weeks ago. So residents are considering that that's contributing to the increase in traffic on Main Street, particularly in regards to the parking. So they are looking to potentially reactivate their parking committee. And then also direct people to park on Bridge Street by the town hall and library for extra space. And in terms of planting trees, there might be some new trees on one of the sides of Little Lake Erie. The beautification committee suggested some cherry blossoms, crab apple trees. There was a couple of different ones. And there's been some discussion about whether that could potentially get in the way because it also is a public place where sometimes people fish, and if it will obstruct views, the beautification committee said they carefully picked the types of trees, so that wouldn't be the case, but it has not yet been decided, and they'll meet with the committee, and then it will be discussed with the full board again.
And there's some news in there for folks that if they weren't paying attention in Narrowsburg, I think it's very interesting to hear that those shops have opened up in recent weeks, because if folks remember, the Rasmussen's Furniture is where that big fire broke out back in May of 2018. So now, after 7 years, we're seeing those shops open up in there. So that's a big news story for the community as well. And now, also, I guess we have a story, changing the story, is that there was a vehicle crash in Coshecton as a bad accident.
Yeah, last Thursday, there was a really horrible accident, and that took a life. Cher Singh, 37, of Middletown, died in a head-on collision involving two trucks and one car, and one of the trucks was a budget rental truck. Manpreet Singh, a family member, told the River Reporter from the hospital that a nurse told him that Cher had been hit head-on by the truck and that the trauma was just too great, and that he died at around noon at the time of the incident. Mm. Emergency responders at the scene told Manpreet that one of the trucks traveling south on County Route attempted to pass on the left and hit Cher as he was traveling north. And to give a little context about how these individuals are very much connected to the community here, one of Cher's family members at the scene of the incident, but not part of the incident itself, owns the Sitko Singh Food Market in Narrowsburg.
All right. Well, thank you
so
for
really just
Be
careful and drive safely.
Yeah, especially this time of year when it's so busy, there's even more people on the roads. Real quick, Ruby, we've only got a little more than a minute and a half for this update. If can you give us, you know, Camp Finfo proposal that's been before the planning board in Highland, renovating the Kittanini campground in Berryville, a resort with hundreds of RV park models, story people have been following, we've been following here. What's your update?
Yes, so there hasn't been an update in quite a couple of months. And now FIMFO is back before the planning board for the first time in 2024 and is moving through their environmental review. So they're at step 6 out of 10, and they have just submitted the draft environmental review impact statement, which basically discusses all of the potential ways that this project could impact the environment, and the public will have an opportunity to comment on that once the planning board votes to accept that.
Okay, well, thank you for giving us that update, and please do give us any further updates that you get on Camp FIMFO. Ruby, thank you so much for joining us and giving us the latest news from the River Reporter. All these stories are at riverreporter.com, and the new edition hits the newsstands tomorrow.
I'd also like to say that people should donate to the fund drive in honor of Jason, our lovely host, because he does a great job of getting through the local news every week with me, and it's great fun.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that, Ruby. Yeah, if you want to do what Ruby said, you can give us a call right now, 845-482-4141, or go to wjffradio.org. Ruby, thanks again. Okay, so let's just get right into our next story here. And New York Focus, it's the independent newsroom reporting on how power and politics work in New York and how the state really operates. Radio Catskill partners with New York Focus to bring you their in-depth journalism, and Medicare Advantage plans are spreading across upstate New York despite a reputation for denying care. In Cortland County, retirees kept it at bay. Radio Catskill's Patricia Rubio spoke to Chris from New York Focus on how the retirees have been able to do this.
So the biggest concern I heard about Medicare Advantage from them was prior authorization, which, if you have private insurance, you probably know, is a form of bureaucratic red tape that private insurance companies use. They claim as a cost-saving measure. Basically, if your doctor wants to prescribe a certain medication or order a certain procedure, they have to get the sign off from your insurer, which is not something that exists in traditional Medicare, which is what the Cortland County retirees currently have. They currently have, which is fairly common for pension plans, is they have traditional Medicare plus what you call a supplement, which covers that remaining 20% of medical costs that traditional Medicare doesn't. So they were concerned about the introduction of prior authorization to their medical care it often leads to like unnecessary delays in care or potentially outright denials. They're also worried about what you call a provider network, which is another thing that is only exists in private insurance and not in traditional Medicare. You may be familiar with the term out of network. Basically, if you have private insurance, they try to direct you toward those providers, those hospitals, those doctors that they already have a contract with. And anything else is out of network, and you might be caught paying the entire cost of a medical procedure. So those were the big things. The provider network thing also, if you want to get into the weeds, is Medicare Advantage plans will often restrict access to academic hospitals. So if you catch, if you get a rare form of cancer, for example, and you want to go to Sloan Kettering, you might be out of luck. So these are just some of the things that the retirees worried about.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking to hear that, just because they, if you have a certain level of care that you're used to, and even talked about that, they say if you want to go to Sloan Kettering, which is one of the, my personal opinion, one of the best hospitals for cancer, mm-hmm. in your state, it'll be hard not to get into, because you expect that they do take Medicare. I know they take Medicaid, take Medicare for that. How do they fight back in a way against this?
Yeah, so this, a big part of this, I think, is that it felt out of nowhere. It felt like a betrayal. These are all municipal employees. So these are people who worked relatively low paying government jobs for decades in some cases, with the understanding that at the end of that, they would get the perks of a government job, such as the pension and such as the agreed upon medical coverage that they were promised. So basically, they found out about this in a letter in the mail last July. The ones who understood what that meant, who knew what Medicare Advantage was, who knew that it's different from traditional Medicare, started to panic a little bit. They started going to informational sessions to learn more about it, but they fell into a state of panic because of how fast this process was happening. They found out about it in July, some of them even later than that. And the county legislature pushed it through in August. So they basically had 6 weeks of trying to learn about Medicare Advantage, only to be told that they didn't have a say in the matter. So one of them is a sort of admirably hard-headed lawyer named Ed Goller, who worked as a public defender in Cortland County for, I think, 16 years. And he basically just started getting people together saying, hey, I think we should stop this. New York City had already done a similar thing where their 250,000 municipal retirees had gotten together and mounted a lawsuit to prevent the city from pushing them onto an Advantage plan. So there was already a model for this kind of lawsuit. And Ed basically modeled his lawsuit after that, drove around town, meeting up with people in parking lots. Some of them, they're all seniors. So some of them are ill in some capacity. I talked to one who really wanted to sign onto this lawsuit, but she had a broken knee. So she had to get a notary to come to her house. So basically it was like an all hands on deck situation where everyone was calling Ed saying, hey, how can I help? And they mounted this lawsuit, and the judge ordered a stay at one point, and then the county basically backed off.
So how do you think this would reflect the broader trend of privatization of healthcare benefits? You're talking about New York City did something similar to it there, and now is happening in Portland County. Do you see this an ongoing trend?
Yeah, I mean, in one sense, it's running counter to the trend, actually. Most Medicare Advantage growth is happening on the individual level. So people will see ads for a Medicare Advantage plan, and they'll sign up for it. And the program, as a result, has exploded in the last 20 years. And for example, in 2016, it was about a third of Medicare enrollees were on a Medicare Advantage plan. Last year, that number had risen up to 52%. So people who are watching this space, I think, one guy I spoke to was the former head of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Don Berwick. And he's very anti-Medicare Advantage, I would say. And he's worried that if Medicare Advantage continues to grow, it'll eventually pose an existential threat to traditional Medicare. So in one sense, the Cortland situation is running counter to that trend. But in this specific sort of space of employers forcing their retirees onto an Advantage plan, I think we are seeing a little bit of a turning point where there's growing skepticism toward these plans, and there's certainly a lot more awareness than there used to be. A lot of times this will happen, and employers will force their retirees onto an Advantage plan without the affected seniors necessarily knowing or even understanding what that really means, until down the road they get a prior authorization denial, for example. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, this is Medicare Advantage. But I do think there's been this case, there's been a case in Delaware, and there's been the New York City case most prominently. And I do think the three of those things represent the trends toward seniors starting to wake up to this happening and learning that there is something they can do about it if they want to.
We had something similar happen to in our county, not with the county employees, but with mm-hmm. the local community college. It wasn't Medicare Advantage, but the college was looking to change to a private company. The employees there at the college, community college, was on their night shift, which is state medical there. And the reason why they wanted to change was because of the rising cost of healthcare. Was this the reason why there was a shift to the Medicare Advantage plans to save money?
Absolutely. On the county side, that was entirely the thinking. Basically, what the county is currently paying for, I may have explained this earlier, is traditional Medicare covers 80% of all medical costs for any senior who's on it. And so what a pension will usually do is they'll pay for a supplement that covers the other 20%. And that supplement is very expensive, or at least in the county's eyes, it's very expensive. But what Medicare Advantage does is they have a deal where basically the federal government pays them a capitated rate, so just like a specific rate per person that enrolls in a Medicare Advantage plan. And so effectively, by switching over to Medicare Advantage, that extra 20%, the federal government has taken on more of it. So Cortland County is then able to push a big part of this cost off of themselves and onto the federal taxpayer. That's a little wonky, but basically it results in the county paying much less, which is why this is happening with employers and why it's so appealing for them to sometimes sneakily push their retirees onto these plans.
So what are some of the future actions or legislation are being considered to protect retirees from being forced into a Medicare Advantage plans against their will in the future?
In the state of New York, there are bipartisan bills. I guess we call them mirror bills. There's one in each house of the state legislature that are effectively the same bill when they both make their way through the legislature at the same time. I don't know the current state of those. Not going to pass this year, obviously. But basically, they would make it so that employers couldn't push their retirees onto an Advantage plan or otherwise diminish their healthcare benefits in any way. I do understand that there's a similar bill on the federal level. Rep. Richie Torres, who's from New York, introduced a very similar bill to those state bills to Congress last year. I think inspired by the New York City retirees, because that is the highest profile case of this kind of thing. And then there's also a bipartisan bill that's been floating around a couple of years in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate, called the Improving Seniors Timely Access to Care Act, which is a bipartisan bill that would streamline and reduce prior authorization requirements in Medicare Advantage. So there are also, in addition to that are aimed at preventing this kind of forced switch from happening, there is a lot of effort to make Medicare Advantage just a better program in general. We've also seen the Biden administration in the last couple of years. A big problem with Medicare Advantage is it was initially designed to, like many public-private partnerships, is designed to result in innovation and cost reduction and all these things. Instead, Medicare Advantage now costs the federal government more per person than traditional Medicare does, in part because of some of these sort of, in some cases, fraudulent behavior like upcoding, where these big insurance companies essentially exaggerate a patient's condition or the treatment or whatever to secure bigger payments from the federal government and by extension, the taxpayer. So basically, the government has been radically overpaying these big insurance companies for years. And now I think there's like getting wise to it and trying to claw some of that money back. But it's certainly still a problem. And it's definitely a Medicare Advantage in general. I think we'll definitely see a lot of policy changes in the coming years because it has become so big, and there are these sort of loud warning flags about some of its issues.
We're talking to Chris Hansen from New York Focus on his latest article, How Upstate Retirees Fought Privatized Healthcare and Won. You can find that article on our website, wjffradio.org, or you can find it also, as always, on New York Focus website. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on this program and letting us know about this, because this is an ongoing issue, especially with the increased healthcare costs. And the increase, obviously, the retirees are more and more. Thank you again, Chris, for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you, Patricio, for that report. Thank you to New York Focus and all of our news partners. Thank you to Ruby Rayner. Thank you for listening, listener, to the Local Edition. I've been your host, Jason Dole. We'll be back tomorrow evening, and we'll do it again. In the meantime, we've got the Daily coming up, and we've got something special for you after that at 7 o'clock. It's a retro cocktail hour, and once again, your spirit provider, bartender, Mike Roberto, will be here on air live with us making a cocktail during Retro Cocktail Hour. Why does this happen? Because it's the fun drive, and we're trying to have a little fun while we also raise a little funds. We need your fund to go on the tally next. Please give what you can. Give now. 845-482-4141. Donate at WJFFradio.org. Big thanks to listener Consuelo from Liberty for donating online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Cat.